David Reneke, Astro Dave, we call him. He runs a website called davidreneke.com, and there's some really cool astro stuff to discover, including, and surely you've got an insight into this, David, NASA is announcing a new discovery with the, what is it, the Hubble? I thought the Hubble was decommissioned.
Well, you know, here we go again. NASA with their press releases that don't really amount to anything. I put this up there because of its, mainly because of its uniqueness, its substance, and on, also on the verge of the launch of the, you know, with the Webb telescope.
Yeah.
NASA have never, ever had a real good PR section of where they are. They come out with press releases a lot of time that don't really go anywhere and don't say much. But this one seems to be a bit more tantalizing in the fact that it's saying they've got a new discovery they want to announce to the world. One for the record books. Never heard that term before.
Oh, really? Okay.
And an exciting new observation from the Hubble telescope. Now, you'd think the Hubble telescope had found everything that you'd wanted to by now, after 32 years. But look, no more. It's come out again. They've got this this new information. Don't quite know what it is, but I'll make a prediction. They've found something out there, or they're looking at something that's not quite distinct enough to make out what it is. It's probably something unique. Maybe a build on something we've been looking at before, but I think they're going to turn this over to the Webb team to evaluate a little bit further. So we won't know until, well, they're saying Wednesday, but that's their time. Probably Thursday morning we should have a better fix on what they're talking about.
Okay, so let's await what discoveries they will bring up. And look, as far as I'm concerned, David, NASA's becoming more and more irrelevant anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, it's getting that way now. Nothing like it used to be.
Yeah, now, we've come across this before. Asimov talked about a space elevator in many of his books. Are China about to make it a reality?
Yeah, I think when you think about a space elevator, you think, is this real? Can it be built? Well, yes, it can. They've already built prototypes of it, but you're talking about a cable or a piece of technology, a ribbon, if you will, made by the new nanotechnology. Now, nanotechnology is a new way of building stronger, more sturdy steel-type products. And they're talking about a cable here, a cable that can be stretched between the underneath the ocean, anchored there by some mechanism, and extending up into orbit around the Earth there and attached to it.
And the thing that worries me about this, David, is the potential for sabotage. I'd hate to be caught at the top of the elevator out in space somewhere with no way to get back.
Well, you wouldn't want anything running into it, would you, like an aeroplane or whatever? But tethering it between, you know, you're anchoring it on the ocean floor there and having it connected to the space station or an orbiting platform would keep that cable taut. And the idea is to put a little car there or a container or a capsule, if you will, and fill it full of whatever you want to take up into space. Up it goes, maybe 2 or 3 days if it's a slow journey. Further down the track, you may be able to carry people in it. But the idea of a space elevator is not new. It came to the fore in 1979 in a book written by Arthur C. Clarke called Fountains of Paradise. And in that book, he had his travellers going into space by the same sort of mechanism. Now, at the time it was built there, there's no way in the world this book was out, there's no way in the world we could build something like this. But there is now. And apparently the Japanese and the Chinese are looking at doing pretty much that same sort of thing. In fact, I believe that the Japanese at one stage did build a prototype. But we're talking about a cable hundreds of kilometres long. And you've got to wonder about the vibration frequency of it, where it's located. Beats me, I don't know. But when Clark put the book out, when the book came out, Fountains of Paradise in 1979, he was asked by a reporter who was reviewing the book, you know, Arthur, when do you think something like this could become a reality? Clark turned around with the best quip I've ever heard. He said, when everyone stops laughing.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh either, but to me, a space elevator doesn't seem sexy. I just want a rocket or some sort of shuttlecraft to get me where I want to go. A space elevator just really seems 1950s technology.
Yeah, it's quite odd when you think about it, but look, anything's possible. It's a cheap way of doing things, and it's a safe way of getting into space if you consider it.
Yeah, see, David, cheap. That's the operative word, cheap.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll never happen, but it's an odd idea. It's one of those flaky stories that you get from time to time.
I like it, though, David. And what about this story? A question you're asking, why does NASA allow male astronauts to stay in space longer than females. This is something beyond the sexist.
It's a real study that was done many years ago. Now, we know that when you're in space there, you're subject to more radiation when you're on planet Earth.
Yeah.
We're lucky here because we've got a magnetosphere, we've got an atmosphere, we've got everything protecting us as we walk around. But the higher up you go, the worse things become. And a lot of people don't realise this, but high-flying pilots, pilots who travel in those jets that go overseas, they have to get regular checks every year because there's a certain amount of radiation they can take in, and then they've got to be careful they don't do too much more.
Yeah.
NASA have been doing a study on gender to see whether women and men can sort of take the same sort of radiation factor. And it turns out that the women can't. Now, the study itself may be flawed because it's built on old information or old data. But one thing we do know that the tests they've been carrying out is based on age and sex, ranging in a lower limit of radiation exposure for a woman and allowing an upper limit for a 60-year-old man or anything below. Now, this is determining how long people stay in space for. And that's probably the reason most of the long journeys, the lengthy journeys up on the space station have always been by blokes.
Well, I've got a guy just about to come back down. He's been there a year himself. He did a Q&A from the ISS just about, you know, the best parts he had in space, the worst part and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's almost becoming blasé, these people up there for a year or more.
Well, it is, you know. It is becoming commonplace. But NASA did find, the studies did show when women and men were exposed to a high level of radiation for the same amount of time, women had more than twice the risk of men of developing a lung cancer.
Yeah.
Now, some of this data goes way back. You might be surprised to know that they're using data from the atomic bomb blast in Japan. Now, that particular for lung cancer, they're looking at the data and the effects on people over the decades since that happened. And they found that women were more sensitive to the radiation. Mm. This is where a lot of the early data came from.
Yeah.
But NASA are now changing their minds. They're looking at it in a new light. They're saying, look, there shouldn't be any difference whatsoever. So now the pendulum has swung the other way a little bit in favour of the women, and that's why women haven't really been selected all that much for long-distance space flight, based on old data. So there you go. It's just one of those things that NASA have always been a blokey organisation.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the problem, is that NASA has decided to, come out with all these studies, and they're really stuck back in the 1950s when you think about it.
It does, yeah. It goes way back to the early selection of astronauts back in 1961. They were all blokes. They trained women as well at the time, but when push came to shove, and at the end of it, you know, the NASA doctor said, look, we don't think women are going to be strong enough to withstand the rigors of spaceflight.
Yeah, you know what? Put them up there and we'll see what happens, David. Before we go, check out davidrenicky.com because you've got 10 fascinating facts about astronomy that nobody's ever thought to ask, David.
Yeah, do you want to hear a few?
Yeah, come on.
Space is completely silent. There's no sound up there, none whatsoever. And that leads to the little phrase out of the movie you know quite well. In space, nobody can hear you scream. A NASA spacesuit, listen to this, Wilco, 1974 we're talking about.
Yeah.
Spacesuit, $12 million. That's $12 million US. A lot of money, isn't it? 70% of that cost is in the backpack and the control module. So they're a pretty pricey little object. Now, this is something that a lot of people don't know about. These are things that we get asked quite often. And it turns out that 1 million Earths can fit inside the sun.
What?
People want to know how big is the sun. You can't tell them 1.25 kilometres across. It doesn't really relate all that much.
Yeah.
But when you say 1 million Earths can fit inside the sun, it gives you some idea on how big that star is up in the sky there every day. Well, if you're lucky enough to get the sunshine. Here's one that I like. There are more trees on Earth than stars in the Milky Way.
Oh, no, no, no.
Yeah, about three. Who counts these things? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
There are about 3 trillion trees on planet Earth and between 1 and 300 or 400 billion stars. So trees outnumber everything including the stars in the Milky Way. And there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, I suppose because in space there's a lot of, well, there is a lot of space between the planets and the stars, and there's probably not that much between the trees here on their planet.
And what about how many stars in the universe? Well, if we knew how big the universe was, we'd be able to give you an idea. But there's an old saying that you've heard before, there are more stars in the universe than grains of sand on every beach in the world.
Yes.
That's a lot, isn't it?
That's a lot.
More stars in the universe than heartbeats for every human being who ever lived.
Is that a biblical passage? Have I heard that from scripture somewhere?
No. Not that I know of.
No, I thought Jesus may have mentioned the fact that there's more grains of sand on the earth. Or have I got my metaphors mixed up between NASA documents and scripture?
Yeah. I did say to somebody once, if you want to know how we fit in the scheme of things, go down to your local beach or Bondi or anything like that up in Queensland on the Gold Coast. Stand on one of those beaches there. Now, I pick up a grain of sand, and with a black texture, I put a black, I colour it, not grain of sand.
Yeah.
Now, I throw that grain of sand back down on the ground while you're blindfolded. Now, I ask you to go and find it. That's like trying to find our star in all the other stars out there being the grains of sand. That's simply a good another way of looking at it, you know?
Yeah. I love these facts, mate. They're up there at davidrenicky.com if people want to have a look at them. I'll post the links up on our socials. But time's got us again, David. I'll catch you next week, mate.
I'll talk to you soon, Bill. Go ahead.